everyone. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Thanks for sticking with us.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you again.
Yeah, great to be with you, John. And Shireen and John, we have listeners that have been writing in. We're so excited when we hear from listeners.
Listeners with an S, plural,
yeah,
listeners.
Yeah, including Jessica from Sweden. She's in the Foreign Service and the U.S. Embassy. Great to have you as a listener, Jessica.
Yeah, happy to have you listening along. We also got emails this week from Scott and Kendra. And I just want to say, when you send emails, we try to shout you out, but we really do read them, appreciate them, and we try to work in, if you've got specific questions, to work them into the show.
Yeah. And there's never a shortage of things to talk about, John.
There's never a shortage. You know, Anthony's got a whole list of things for us here. There's more than he can even keep track of.
Our protocol is our producer kind of prompts us on some things, and boy, is the list long today. And let's just start, John, with you. The U.S. and Russia holding talks in Saudi Arabia on Ukraine. President Zelensky was not there, not invited. This was with the Russian foreign minister and our new Secretary of State, Marco Rubio.
So I think it's good that we're starting to finally have talks. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake that Ukraine is not at the table. Mm-hmm. Given that they're a party to this, given that Russia invaded them, if you want any kind of resolution, I think Ukraine has to be at the table. And I think we need to involve our European partners as well, who are on the front lines of this issue, that it's right on their doorstep.
I can't imagine what it feels like to be President Zelensky right now, that people are meeting on the future of your people, your country, with all that they've done, the harms that have been, applied. Oh, my goodness, Shireen.
Yeah. So as a person who's deeply committed to the notion of diplomacy, I also agree. I'm glad that these talks are happening. What I'm concerned about is that, again, we have an administration that doesn't seem to have necessarily the same commitments to hold Russia accountable. Mm-hmm. In fact, is quite permissive in the structure of what they're allowed to, or I guess what they're imagining. So we're hearing members of the Trump administration, and frankly, J.D. Vance has been quite critical of Ukraine, which is wild to say, but to think about, restoring their borders or creating peace in this situation, I'm not sure the Trump administration has Ukraine's best interests in mind.
Yeah. So European leaders, they're worried about this growing rift between them and the U.S. They meet in Paris. Foreign policy is not my thing. But I have learned over time that when you create a vacuum...
I thought you were an expert on everything.
Domestic policy is my place. But when you create a vacuum, meaning the U.S. withdraws from global leadership, there are plenty of bad actors willing to fill that gap.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the European leaders are worried about.
Yeah, I think that's a real serious and very valid concern.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the U.S. is engaging. So not walking away, they're at least engaging, and I think that's a good step. I mean, in theory, we should have been doing this a couple of years ago. It wasn't happening.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think Ukraine has to be at the table. They have to be part of the discussion. I think what's hopefully going to come out at the end of the day is something that not everybody likes, but something that people can live with. I don't want one side to get everything they want, because that probably says it's an unfair compromise.
So now go to another part of the world, Gaza. You've got the U.S. sending a 2,000-pound bomb to Israel, Netanyahu backing the plan to remove Palestinians. I just can't read this, hear this, without thinking this won't end well.
No, this won't end well. This is ethnic cleansing. Mm-hmm. This is genocide. And to act like, I'll say from the left, right, there were a number of people very critical of the support that the Biden administration continued to give to Netanyahu through what was a horrific and continues to be a horrific war. The outcome that looks like it's taking shape here is untenable. I think undemocratic is not even close to a word that covers it. It is reprehensible.
Mm-hmm. John, you know what I would do, being the non-foreign policy expert?
Oh, I was going to say, please share.
I would pull together a team of very experienced problem solvers that have a lot of knowledge about the area, but also have led and navigated very complex situations. And I would make sure it had a diversity of thought in the group. And I would put them in a room and make them go to work. Instead of this sort of posturing or we're going to do this, I'm going to do this. It feels like this is such a global issue with so much potential for bad that why not have a global team go after it?
Well, when you say global team, who do you invite? Who's part of that global team? Because I think sometimes if you look at history, especially, you know, we'll go back 100 years ago with, if you will, the British Empire, mm-hmm. you know, when they got involved in the Middle East and they started drawing lines, it didn't go out, turn out so well. And so you got to involve those that are on the front lines of this. But
I'd get some foreign ministers from Hamas the past that are respected from both Republican and Democratic administrations. You know, I'd get some from Egypt, from, you know, certainly, I don't know, giving Lebanon a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would do something that takes it out of a power play.
Yeah. So I appreciate that. And I think that there's a lot to be learned there. I'll also say I've had some really interesting experiences. This will surprise nobody with this approach to negotiation or developed by a person out of Brazil that's called Theater of the Oppressed, where like folks come together and they work to resolve big issues. And one of the most interesting places where this has been deployed is in this conflict. Mm-hmm. So bringing Israelis and Palestinians together to actually talk about what it would mean to move forward in a form of governance. Mm-hmm. And so I agree that we mm-hmm. would need that sort of high level for that type of negotiation. But these folks have been living as neighbors for millennia.
Yeah.
And there are solutions that people on the ground have been trying to advance. But the political interests outweigh the personal interests.
Yeah, and when you impose something from the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Well, I wonder to what extent is Trump just throwing out a bunch of stuff, this, that, and the other, just to stir it up to say, okay, come up with a better solution, because if you don't like any of mine, here's your chance.
Okay, let's come to our shores. Let's do some more, you know, local talk. And you can't do this without talking about Elon Musk and Doge.
Yeah.
And I don't know where you guys want to start on this.
Cut, cap, and kill, right?
Well, I guess I'd like to start with, how do you two feel about an unelected billionaire basically running our government?
Well, I feel a lot like the head of Social Security who's resigned, right? Who's seeing they want access to confidential information, and this person's saying, no go for me.
I like that I'm kind of cheering the shaking it up and tightening the belt, and there's a part of it where I look and go, this is kind of like a ninth grader who's just having his first lesson in government that doesn't quite understand how it works. And is all of a sudden like, oops.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to fire these workers. Difference. And there's some that I think you probably should fire. And there's others. It's like, okay, they're performing a critical function, Department of Energy. And you go, oops. And then you start to walk
that
back.
There's a potential for a lot of oops. There's a difference between the spirit of reform and the spirit of, you know, just dismantling things.
Right. Right.
Spirit of disruption. And I just go from everything I've ever read, everything I've ever learned, and my own personal leadership, I try to think of change as something that you lead. And you do things like you have a coalition working on it. You over-communicate a vision.
Yeah.
You generate some short-term wins. And you anchor your changes in culture. Anyway.
Yeah.
All of these things, these are things they teach in business school. None of this is happening.
Well, that's kind of like,
none of this is being embedded in culture.
But that's kind of like evolutionary change. And so,
that's
a different approach than kind of, you know, startup world, we're going to shake it up revolutionary change.
Point,
I guess I would just say, I feel like what we're doing now is just pretending that we're not living in a complete oligarchy where our democracy is collapsing, and we can continue to do that week after week. But I am very concerned mm-hmm. about what's happening, the amount of brain drain and institutional knowledge and protections for the American people. I know, I'm sure that especially John probably has negative feelings about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. This is an institution that was returning millions of dollars to Americans, basically saying banks, you can't defraud people, payday lending, loan sharks, like the ways in which corporations were taking advantage of everyday Americans. That's one of the first things they cut. I mean, this is, to me, and I will say, I encourage people, if you are also concerned, again, about an unelected billionaire dictating what is happening at the highest levels of our government, you should call our representatives mm-hmm. because Representative Moore, who's my representative, is apparently totally fine with this.
Mm-hmm.
I called the office, got basically like, he's pretty good with it. Like, that's not okay.
Hey, Shireen, one of the things I worry about on the left is that you don't have this, but there's so many people who are just turning it off.
Yeah.
It's so depressing to them that they are just putting it on a shelf.
Yeah.
I worry about that.
I do too. And I will say that's like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the word, but that's privilege, right? So I hope Utah doesn't come and sanction me for using a word that in the lexicon of DEI. But what I will tell you is that if you have the ability to shut this off, then your family is not, you know, likely to be deported. Mm-hmm. You're not the kind of person who's going to work every day in an environment, let's say, where you're working with folks with disabilities who are really worried about mm-hmm. getting their protections ripped away, where you're working with folks who are trying to access reproductive health care, where you're serving folks who are on Medicare or mm-hmm. Medicaid. And that is a huge portion of our population here. Many lives are at risk, and I am very worried that life is going to get a lot more difficult for a lot of people.
John, we just have like maybe a minute left in this segment, but how would you, from the right, how would you summarize what's going on? I mean, would you summarize it as a net positive? Would you summarize it as this is the way that it needs to happen if we want to make change? Or would you say, like I say from the middle, that we need more balance here? We need more moderation.
So I'm going to say, I don't know if it's a net positive yet, because you got to kind of wait for it to play out to mm-hmm. see what shakes out. The one key thing that I will highlight, and I've said this for, you know, decades, is, you know, be careful that valuable tool that you then turn over to your opposition that becomes a weapon to be used against you. And I've talked for a long time about how much we've centralized too much at the federal level, should be down in the states and the communities. And we wouldn't be having a lot of this discussion if, from my perspective, the federal government hadn't grown out of control and it's many sizes bigger than it should have been, involved in too many aspects of our lives. And if we're concerned right now about that, to me, you know, Shireen's concerned. I was concerned, you know, now and with the previous administrations, about what's going
government
on at the federal
growth.
Level,
yeah.
government growth,
yeah.
and pushing it back.
Yeah,
and
so
that's where we're sitting
right now.
You're
leaving the window open for a net positive.
Possibly. We'll have to see.
I hear it. Okay, well, let's take a short break. Very interesting discussion on Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we've got news to talk about, but there's news every time I turn on the television that deals with plane crashes.
Don't turn on the television.
I know.
Just read
but
the
this,
news.
But this runway crash in Toronto, oh my goodness, when you see a fuselage turned upside down.
Yeah.
And the fact that they all survived.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. And we all, it's interesting how we all personalize this because we've all landed in snowstorms. You know, we've all been on these sort of commuter flights. We think of our flight attendants as, you know, pouring a Sprite, but look at how they're trained to do this stuff. What was your reaction, John?
How many don't pay attention to the security warnings because you think, oh, that'll never happen, and the mask and this and that, and now you're in a plane that you're hanging upside down and you got to get out.
Yeah. I have this habit that I always tighten my seatbelt upon landing.
Yeah.
And that's because I learned from pilots that the landing's the toughest part, that taking off
is easy.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, relatively speaking.
I have a number of friends who are flight attendants, and it's been a really difficult time.
Oh,
obviously, we're seeing the loss of life, but just into COVID, people lost their blessed minds, and the way people have been acting in air travel. And then now, you know, seeing this kind of really unfortunate high profile accidents is and you know, loss of life, which is terrifying. Grateful that there weren't any in this most recent.
Yeah. Okay, so now we have, going back to sort of Doge and our president, over the weekend, President Trump put on X, he who saves his country does not violate any law.
Yeah.
Whoa. That was troubling.
Yeah. Tell me what you, what are you guys thinking?
I thought that the comment from Senator Schiff that it was spoken like a true dictator.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't think Trump minds wearing that.
What does it mean to save one's country?
I love there's a famous Brigham Young quote where he said that, you know, we agreed to abide by all, you know, good laws.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some of that. But
because your duty is to the Constitution.
Yeah.
Saving the nation is upholding the Constitution.
So the media's
and we all debate what that exactly means.
Yeah.
It doesn't enforce itself.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah.
areas for negotiation, but that's the objective. We believe in a rule of law.
Yeah.
And therefore, by doing that, you're saving the nation.
So this is one of our listeners wrote in about this issue around the Constitution. And I'll just broadly say, I think what's concerning to me is that we are in a moment where I genuinely don't think, unlike, and I do feel like perhaps our Senator Lee has lost his pocket constitution at this point, but Donald Trump is not
Shereen
Mr.
will send one. Don't worry, Senator.
I got another one. I don't think Donald Trump is a person who believes in the power of this document and really the reason that the Constitution matters as much as it does. And I'm troubled that Republicans, who I feel have, I mean, present company excepted, who have for many years kind of lorded over the left with this notion of the supremacy of the Constitution, the mm-hmm. value of the Constitution, now quite readily yeah. seem to be willing to just toss it right out.
George Pyle, the yep. opinion editor of the Salt Lake Tribune, has written about this. Encourage our listeners to go read it. But he basically said, I miss the old Senator Lee.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout all the ways that he's not defending the Constitution like he used to. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, the Senate confirmed RFK Jr. as health secretary. I know.
Did you expect that?
I didn't. I didn't think they'd do it.
You thought they'd miss by a few votes and it wouldn't happen.
Well, you know, Mitch McConnell was the only Republican, if I understand it right, to not support him. I was disappointed in Senator Curtis.
Same.
You know, he put on X the night before the vote. Hey, I met with him. I was encouraged. He confirmed to me that he would not, you know, railroad our vaccine policies and so on and so forth. But I worked in Health and Human Services. I've interacted with secretaries of Health and Human Service. This guy is not the quality of what we've had in the past.
I think that covers it and more. I mean, there's more to be said, but this is concerning.
John's looking at me like, Natalie, that was a bold statement.
Well, I'm just going back to what I said earlier about, yeah. you know, this valuable tool being turned into a weapon concept. Okay, yeah. we're concerned with who the president is, or we're yeah. concerned with the cabinet secretary. Why are we so concerned with that? And what have we done that's resulted in?
Yeah,
we used to kind of not really care.
I can't
care
remember if I've told this story on air, but I remember being in the secretary's office when the CDC comes in to get the permission to spend a lot of money for the egg farms that help with the flu vaccine.
Yeah.
And it's a massive expenditure. And as you know, they're guessing what the flu is going to be in the fall. You have to start cultivating the eggs, you know, in the spring so that the vaccine's ready for the fall. It's a gamble. It's a bet. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like, the secretary cannot sign that.
Right. So I guess I would say, John, to your point, that it seemed like we didn't care that much before. I think often people with deep expertise coming from a background that would suggest that they should be at the head of the Department of Education, not somebody who comes from WWE, right? Like that these are folks that are coming with a long, extensive history and a knowledge base in that area and not a clown car. I mean, honestly, we're in a moment where I'm like, Marco Rubio, thank goodness he's there. And I
Amen,
am
sister.
Not a fan.
And,
right?
And I like him, you know, and
sure.
So like I'm like, he's one of the adults in the room.
One of the maybe at this point, one of the few. So I mean, I think that's part of it too, right? Is
well,
that when we're
I
seeing...
was also surprised Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard. This is not a
and these are two, from my perspective, yeah. Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, liberal Democrats that are now in the Trump administration.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, it's
interesting.
It's a clown car, not expertise
okay,
driven.
We have to transition to local news, but let's do that because I want to talk about the government accountability, you know, and the move on Capitol Hill to change government records availability. But do that
on state Capitol Hill.
Yeah, but remind people that back in Washington, you do have Elon Musk, who's basically saying that the employees, the producers at 60 Minutes, deserve a long prison sentence. And then the Washington Post refusing to run an ad critical of Elon Musk. And so now you come to our place where we've got a bill that would dismantle parts of the open records law and undermine government accountability.
Yeah.
This has been getting a lot of attention, mostly from the media themselves. Used to be you don't, the old saying was, don't pick a fight with people that buy ink by the barrel. But the legislature's picking a fight here, John.
Because the press doesn't buy ink by the barrel anymore.
Yeah. There's some of that, so and they're not as powerful.
Not as many people are reading the papers, and so...
Yeah. I want to understand this issue better, but I'm always looking for overreach. And I do feel at times that the State Records Committee and the balancing test does have some overreach. That's just
me. Give an example.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to give a real specific example, but you know, this notion that as a government employee, you can't have draft things that people shouldn't see.
Yeah.
That there aren't some things that belong in the garbage can before they're public. You know, the mm-hmm. fact that every step of the way, sometimes to formulate policy, you need the space to do things.
To imagine, yeah.
I think a senior advisor to a governor deserves to have some privileged conversations with a governor and they make it so you can't do that because you're so worried that something that's draft is going to get the bright spotlight of the press. John, does that make sense to
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
I've just observed that we self-censor in our conversations at high levels because we're worried.
You will have a phone call rather than an email. You will do all sorts of things to avoid creating that
record. I love
record
final
that,
stuff, decision-making stuff to be in the public.
You don't quite know what the committee's going to do.
Stuff before?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You're going back and forth.
So to be clear, what this bill does is it would disband the 7-member committee and replace it with a single administrative law judge appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate.
So this sounds like overreach, perhaps.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say, if we're talking overreach, right? And then the basic idea is that it would eliminate a provision known as the balancing test that allows records that otherwise might not be public to be released if there is an overriding public benefit. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to say that I think this is a concerning trend that we're mm-hmm. seeing by this legislature. I think when you're talking about concentrating power in Washington with the executive, mm-hmm. I'm afraid we've over-concentrated power with the legislature here. And this happened when I was on the county council, and it seemed like they were all for local control until the locals wanted control. And there are many bills that undermine local control this session. And the ways
well,
in
local
which...
local control means that individuals control.
Well,
unfortunately, that's
I'm
what that means.
Roll you know. At this point. So,
I'm going to predict, though, that this bill gets better.
Maybe.
That the way it's currently drafted continues to get massaged and gets better. I know the sponsor. I think highly of him. We'll see how
okay.
this goes.
I just think the public should be paying attention to ways in which information is being controlled and attacks on the judiciary, which are real concerns this session.
So is your concern about the balancing test, or is your concern that there's an ALJ rather than a 7-member committee?
My concern is the over-concentration of power that this legislature and our state capitol seems hell-bent on.
Yeah. John, have you followed the legislation on public unions very closely?
A little bit this session.
Tell our listeners what it does.
So basically what this says is a governmental entity in Utah cannot negotiate with a union or a employee association. And this is one of those things from my perspective. I look back at FDR, and FDR said there should not be, you know, governments negotiating, the federal government should not negotiate with government unions mm-hmm. you know, for government employees. Those employees can go lobby the Congress just like any other person, but it's improper, unfair for those unions to negotiate for benefit packages for those employees. And so I see that kind of trickling down here. And so I think
how does it relate to school districts? And
what it
teachers?
Says is school districts, you can't go negotiate because historically what's happened is school districts have negotiated with a teachers association mm-hmm. at the exclusion, you know, for teachers, mm-hmm. there's clearly others for support staff, but at the exclusion of other teacher associations or other opportunities. Mm-hmm. And not every teacher is a member of that teacher association. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of puts a thumb on the scale in favor of that one association. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen that over the years of trying to say, we need to open this up so more teachers, more employees have the opportunity
doesn't
to negotiate.
Doesn't take away their ability to strike.
Well, I mean, somebody can still go out and do whatever they're going to do. I mean, you can still do that.
I'll just say the most disappointing part of this for me is that there were, the baseline most disappointing part is that, again, the legislature is trying to advance policy that is not good for workers. And we talked about this on a previous episode, not to say you've been listening to everyone, John, but I think one of the concerns that I have is when people say, oh, the membership of this union or that union is down. Actually, they're growing generally in Utah, not a lot, but they are growing. And secondly, when you're in a right to work state, you get all the benefits that come along with that union without having to join it. So you don't have the same pressures that you have in other pro-union states to join the union. So I just think there's a landscape issue that needs to be understood. This did not pass.
Well, the laws
many
have
Republicans-
also changed. For employment, so forth, that is also
many Republicans voted against this piece of legislation. This would not have had a veto-proof majority. Governor Cox signed it and then put out this statement basically saying, I'm like a concern, not enthusiastically supporting it. So why did you sign it, right? Like there were negotiations that were happening to get it to a better version of the bill, and he hauls off and signs it. I think this is a disappointing move for Utah families and workers.
Well, my understanding is one of these associations said they were going to do certain things as part of a compromise and then failed to perform. So the bill went back to an earlier version because they did not deliver on what they promised to deliver.
This is a very punitive legislature, and they have said on the record, I mean, folks have said on the record, I believe, Senator McKay said it right here on this program, and Senator Wyler also said the same thing, that this is punishment to UEA for the work that they did to get the ballot, the constitutional change around the earmark for education. That is what this is about, and they've said it.
Because they said they were going to do one thing, and then they did another. So, they're negotiating good play.
Wow. Never a dull moment on this program, you two.
It should happen oftentimes when you know, I'm doing a negotiation and somebody lies to me. You know,
yeah,
you would expect them to get punished.
I'll turn up the heat here by saying,
please,
what about the bill to ban Planned Parenthood from assisting with sex education in the public schools?
Okay. So let me just say this. So I work at Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. I want to be really clear. The education department provides education in two school districts, Salt Lake and Granite. We're invited to teach in those school districts. Mm-hmm. The curriculum that we teach is approved by the State Board of Education and by committees in those local schools. So Salt Lake and Granite have review committees that look at the materials, and we're invited into classrooms. Not every classroom invites us in, but we do go into these classrooms. What this representative is saying is that she somehow ended up in a health education class that our educators teach in a school district where she does not have children, and she cannot tell us when she attended this, and she also is unwilling to produce the information, she says, violated state mm-hmm. code. I think this is legislation built on some very shaky information. I would even say it's information that feels unlikely to me. And I'm concerned that basically we're going to pass legislation built on a falsehood.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've only got...
And I should just throw in also, you know, I'm in a different role, so I'm speaking on my own personal opinion. Yeah. I'm not sharing on behalf of my employer. So
yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Well, and let me just say this. I think everyone should be concerned when we have a lack of information, right, out mm-hmm. in the public, mm-hmm. good information and good sex education that's approved by communities and schools helps reduce disease, unwanted pregnancies, helps in healthy relationships, consent, safety online. That's
and
what
the message to
is.
Our listeners is stay engaged, stay informed, keep reading news, keep attending committee hearings where you have an interest. See if you can't be part of the change we need to see in this world.
That's right.
Hey, great program. Thanks, Shireen Gourbani, John Dougal, for the conversation. We appreciate Anthony Scoma for producing it. Have a great rest of the week, everyone.